North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. It's Friday, July 25th, and I'm Jack Peterson. I'm joined this morning by Will Love. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
All
right. It's another beautiful day.
It is. I got a question for you.
Okay.
Goonga Galunga. Does that mean anything to you?
Yes.
What does it mean?
Yes, it does mean something to me. It means... What, when you die, on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. Look at you. All right. Yeah. And I think most people learn that from...
the movie Caddyshack.
Yeah, Caddyshack. Yeah. And it's 45 years old now. 45 years old. So anyway.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That's but and Bill Murray has that going for him, so...
Which is nice.
Yes.
I enjoy that film as well. That's good. That's a little good news for us today. 45 years of Caddyshack. Also, representing a technological breakthrough for North Idaho News of the Week,
we are joined
live by a telephone. We're going to see if this actually works by Sansere Mitchell, senior writer for the Sandpoint Reader. Sansere, can you hear us?
Yes, indeed.
And I think I can hear you, too. I think our listeners can, too. Before I run down the news, what exotic location are you joining us from this morning, Sansere?
Oh, I'm out in the middle of the woods. You'll never find me.
Cool. Okay. Are you in the state somewhere?
Am I in what?
In this state? In the state of Idaho?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Our beautiful local woods.
Okay.
So I know how to get home if I get lost.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for taking the time out of your morning to call in, and I will...
The news never stops, does it, Sansere?
No, it does not.
Let's start with the headlines, and I'm going to start with probably the biggest... This one made national news, of course, this week. Brian Kohlberger, who murdered Casey Goncalves, Madison Mogan, Zaina Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin in Moscow in the early hours of November 13th, 2022, was sentenced this week to 4 terms of life without parole. That was on July 23rd that the sentence was handed down. Before the sentencing, members of the family were given a chance to speak before the court, and this was following the lifting of the gag order related to the case. But that is now official, and the case is now closed. All the local papers covered that, but I saw that headline, I think, made it pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. I know New York Times had several articles about the proceedings. So,
let's see. We'll talk. And of course, the victims, at least one of the victims I know, had relatives locally. So, you know, close connection to our area. Talk about the county a little bit. Bonner County seems like it's been a quiet few months at the county level since we talked about what's going on at the county commission compared to what in the last couple years has been a pretty dramatic venue. But the county commission has been quietly working right along. However, we do have some news this week. This week, for one thing, the county commissioners voted to move forward with tentative plans to change the layout of the Bonner County Administration Building. Their goal is to make certain high-traffic offices more accessible. Staff engineer Spencer Ferguson has been directed to seek an architect to design the renovation, but no funds have been approved for it as of yet. Also in the county, Bonner County and members of a former Board of County Commissioners were among more than 50 defendants named in a RICO lawsuit on July 18th. This is related to the Mountain Homestead development north of Ponderay. And Sansray Mitchell has the story in this week's Reader, which we'll get to in just a minute. One last note from the county. Their meeting on July 22nd was interrupted by a so-called Zoom bomber, where an unauthorized participant in the Zoom call that just started blasting, I think, just what was it? Causing a distraction and causing the meeting to have to be briefly postponed until they could shut them down and resume the meeting. Well, in the city of Ponderay, just yesterday, they hosted an open house and public hearing focused on its updated comprehensive plan. The plan calls for, as their press release, I think, says, it doesn't, the press release says, quote, "While the city of Ponderay does not desire to be, nor is it anticipated to become, a large city, Ponderay is making good on its promise of being the little city with the big future." That's as anyone who drives into Ponderay will recognize that phrase from their prominent sign on US 95. I don't know that the changes are that dramatic in the plan, but it's an interesting plan. I don't think the parts of Ponderay that many of us who don't live in Ponderay see most regularly, which is kind of that that commercial corridor, that looks like that's going to remain intact. But there are plans for long-term development sort of around the new, relatively new Field of Dreams mm-hmm. complex is interesting. It looks like they're briefly summarize, I'd say their plan is to expand, single family neighborhoods into that northern part of the city of Ponderay, as well as introduce more parks and green spaces and recreational areas. So the long term plan for Ponderay is interesting and would be worth checking out. Hopefully we'll get somebody on these airwaves to talk about that more in depth and with more expertise in the near future. How about in the city of Sandpoint, where the city council adopted an increase on development impact fees? These are the fees that a developer would pay when creating new construction in the city of Sandpoint, to the city. The vote to adopt those increased fees, which we can break down if we have the time, but increases are the development impact fees increased by 75%. Let's see, for residential developments, 32% for retail developments, 90% for industrial developments, and 153% for office space. Is the increase level for fiscal year 2026. The city council voted 3-3 on adopting those impact fees all at once, as opposed to a phased-in approach over the course of 3 years. That was right. Mainly the other suggestion.
Leading to the mayor.
The mayor cast a tie-breaking vote in favor, and so they will be adopting those impact fees, swallowing it all in one go.
Based on Zach Hagedon's reporting, it mm-hmm. sounds like it, you know, for the most part, the city council was okay with these changes. It's just more of how the implementation would take place.
I think that's exactly right. As far as the 3-3 vote was not over whether or not the changes, the split was not whether they'll take place, but more the schedule on right. which they'll be implemented. I think it's fair to say that a reading this report kind of, or of Hagedon's reporting in the Sandpoint Reader, characterizes council member Rick Howarth as maybe a little more skeptical on the impact fees, but the vote was the split was not on the matter of implementation. It was just, or not the matter of implementation, but the manner mm-hmm. of the implementation, I think. Also in the city of Sandpoint, planning and zoning has the Planning and Zoning Commission has extended Averill Hospitality's conditional use permit for another year. All five of the attending commissioners voted to approve the requested extension without discussion. There was a brief presentation from City Planner Bill Dean, and the approval keeps the already announced plan for the new Lakeside Hotel in place until Averill Hospitality moves to the building permit phase. So that effort is ongoing, and the permit has been extended for one more year.
Yeah. And according to Jack Freeman's article in the Bonner County Daily Bee, you mm-hmm. can stay at the Edgewater till the 31st, or they're taking reservations till then. Of August.
Of August.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you can still stay at the existing hotel mm-hmm. until then. Okay. Well, unless Will, did I miss anything? Any big important news items? Anything from the sports or education front,
which
are so often your beats?
Yeah, the Idaho Ed News had an article this week from Emma Epperly about some movement from some districts to add online schools. And so anyway, one of those school districts includes the West Bonner County School District. And so essentially what they're trying to do is build a bridge with homeschool, because especially in Bonner County, I think nationwide, we're seeing more and more kids go to homeschool. Mm-hmm. And so the districts are trying to find ways to help facilitate that for families, but also it does bring in some money for them as well. And so anyway, mm-hmm. just kind of an interesting thing there is West Bonner County School District kind of gets its feet under it. It's starting to look mm-hmm. to expand and do other things.
Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk a little bit with Sansare about the news from the county commission. Let's see here. Should we start, I guess, anything more to report about that Zoom bomber? I guess the most interesting part about it was not so much that it happened, but this is after a long, it's gone back and forth quite a bit between the current county commission and the last one, whether they're, you know, whether and how much comment to be allowed from participants who are not physically present at the meeting. I don't know. Anything else to report about the Zoom bomb, so-called, Sansare?
Yeah, so these Zoom bombs are always done anonymously. They're using fake screen names, and they're playing recordings, so you can't identify the person's voice. It's a sort of robotic, like AI voice, or maybe modulated. So the point of these bombs is really just to get attention to hate speech. So Commissioner Williams, who's the chair, did very well. Essentially, they didn't really comment on what was going on. They just waited for this person to be ejected from the Zoom and then continued as if nothing had happened, which is exactly what you're supposed to do in these incidents. You don't want to give them any kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll never know probably anything about this person or their motivations or whether or not they are even from this area. They likely aren't. But we do know that unlike when this happened at the Sandpoint City Council, the commissioners, at least the current board, does not intend to limit public comment via Zoom. And as you mentioned, that has been going back and forth with the previous board. They ended Zoom participation. They reinstated it. They put limitations on it, or they made people sign up online and list, you know, what they wanted to talk about. So just some added stipulations to sort of gather information from people, both to fill out the record and also just to know whether or not people who are zooming into these meetings actually live in this area. Mm-hmm. That last rule was one of the 12 standing rules that was voted out pretty much immediately after the new board was sworn in. And when we asked, you know, if there were going to be any changes, if even that maybe people wouldn't be able to unmute themselves, they just have to raise their hand and that the moderator would unmute them, Commissioner Williams essentially said, no, we want it to be as open as possible. We want people to be able to talk when they need to talk. And so it doesn't appear that anything will change because of this Zoom attack.
Hmm. Okay. I was going to say, isn't that one of the options that Zoom provides you? And I'm not a Zoom master of any kind, but yeah, I thought you could kind of mute everybody and then let people raise their hands, so to speak. But they're not interested in pursuing that, at least not at this time.
No,
kind of interesting.
People do already raise their hands to hold on, so it wouldn't be that big of a change. But I think it's more of a symbolic barrier to the public accessing.
Okay.
And you mentioned that this happened with the city. What's the city's protocol in regard to kind of, or do they have one?
Yeah, so this happened back in May of 24 in the city council, and Mayor Jeremy Grimm essentially said that the speech, because it was hate speech, it violated their code of conduct for the meetings. And so they took it to a vote and discontinued public comment via Zoom. And they also said they hoped that that would just get more actual butts in seats at the meeting. The county is in less of a sure position for that because, of course, people who go to a Sandpoint City Council meeting live in Sandpoint, which it's not very much of a commute, but people in the county could be driving, you know, upwards of an hour, 2 hours to get to these meetings. So that's why it's far more important to have online participation for them.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's talk about that. The proposed change to the Bonner County Administration Building. I think I summarized it more or less correctly, but the specific offices that they're planning to move are, hold on, turning to the front page of my Daily Bee here. They're planning to move the, it's the treasurer, right? And let's see, Bonner County Road and Bridge and GIS. Those three offices are, their aim is to make all three of those more accessible, because I guess that's where the public most often has to, most often interacts with county administration.
Yes, it's very much, it's mostly about the treasurer's office. That's the office that gets a lot of foot traffic, and it is on an upper level, and the elevator in the building is notoriously finicky, and so they want to make it more accessible to people with those needs who can't walk up the stairs, especially. And so Road and Bridge and GIS being moved around are more to accommodate the treasurer's office move.
Okay.
They are going to give them some nice stuff, though, and make more of like a little shop sort of entrance area, so that people can come in and talk to someone at the front desk and be welcomed. Because right now it's sort of a makeshift entrance that the staff has been having to work around.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, Sansere, that, you know, was asked if the county staff could accomplish this, and what was kind of their answer?
Yeah, so they asked the director of facilities if maybe just staff could move around desks and things and kind of work within the existing layouts without really expending much money. And Teddy Lupton, the director of facilities, said, you know, it's me and one staff member, and we're fixing everything in the county, all of the county-owned buildings. So if she said, essentially, if they could put the county on hold, then sure, that would be great, and they'd try it. But with how stretched thin they are, there's no possible way.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so they're moving the treasurers, or the plan is to move the treasurers, at least to make a plan to move the treasurers, and then we'll see if they adopt it when something comes in.
Yes, it's a plan of a plan of a plan.
Yeah. Okay. I think kind of the big bombshell here of the week for the county is that the county was named in a RICO lawsuit. RICO, meaning, for those who aren't aware, the RICO stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations. Famously used to go after the mob, I think most famously, but it has a number of applications, including here. It's residents. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but if I read this correctly, it's basically current residents of the Mountain Homestead development who are suing more than 50 named parties to the lawsuit, and that includes the county and former commissioners, Bonner County commissioners, who had approved the development, Steve Bradshaw, Dan McDonald, and Jeff Connolly. They're also suing Panhandle Health District and real estate agencies, contractors, title agencies, and developers involved in the sale, development, or approval of the housing community. What's happening in the Mountain Homestead development currently that's causing them to bring this lawsuit?
Members of the Mountain Homestead community have been coming to public meetings for quite a while talking about the issues that they've been facing. And the biggest and most dangerous one is they are alleging that their septic system and drain field are leaching into their water. They have a well, and so the drinking water has become contaminated with chloroform bacteria, E. coli, arsenic, nitrates, just lots of bad stuff that you don't want to be drinking. And residents have reported getting sick, developing rashes, having different responses to this. And so essentially the homeowners are saying that nothing about this development was done correctly. The septic system and the drain field weren't put in correctly. There are property lines running through different parts of buildings. Stuff is going on to other people's properties. The ingress and egress of the road is little to none. You can't get emergency vehicles down the road. And that's the big point for the county, is that this this development was made using a minor land division, an MLD. Mm-hmm. And they are alleging that the MLD process, which we already know is flawed, was also done illegally, because it was used to essentially create five lots as part of the original property, which MLDs are intended to create four or fewer lots.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue that the county has already, talked about extensively is that MLDs, there was a lot of loopholes in the code that defined them, And so essentially developers were able to apply for minor land divisions to create subdivisions without any of the proper infrastructure that would be required if they actually applied for a subdivision permit. And so that includes things that these current homeowners are complaining about, stormwater management requirements, regulations on the road width, surfacing, accessibility for first responders. So definitely seeing the results of those loopholes and the ability for developers to cut corners on that.
Yeah.
It's more, I would say the complaint is more focused on the actual developers, but the homeowners are essentially alleging that everybody involved in the sales, in the development, in the approval, including Panhandle Health District, including just any real estate agent who happened to be selling one of those homes, has been conspiring to essentially hide all of the issues with the development to get people to buy into it and then cost them, the complaint estimated, you know, over $1 million in damages already.
The Mountain Homestead development, is it, how many units are in that development? Approximately, I guess.
It was divided into 8 lots. So there are two original parcels that were divided using minor land divisions. And what they are saying is that even though they applied to divide it into 4 lots each, they did not account for an acre in one case and over an acre in another of land. So essentially they excluded part of the lot, subdivided that part into 4, leaving a little bit left over, which made it into 5 lots.
Right.
Those 5 lots, though, or the 5th lots, are what's being used as the ingress and egress road.
Yeah. My question, I guess, is kind of like the order of things here, or the chronological order. So in April, the county commissioners adopted a moratorium on all of these MLDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that extends until October. But basically, there are no minor land divisions until October, as the planning department works to close the loopholes. The Mountain Homestead lawsuit was just filed in this month, but was this, mm-hmm. was the moratorium in response to, the, you know, kind of a pending lawsuit, or was the lawsuit in response to the moratorium, or are these things just coincidentally coming to a head at the same time?
There's a connection, but it's also a bit coincidental. So
yeah.
the county has been attempting to close this loophole in the MLD code for quite a while. And they attempted a moratorium actually with the previous board, and word got out that they were going to institute the moratorium. And so developers essentially came in and flooded them with applications to get in before the moratorium went up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that didn't work. And so they've been trying to figure out a way to achieve that end, to achieve a moratorium so that they can close the loophole without alerting every developer in the area that they just need to, you know, get their low-level subdivision through as quickly as possible. And
mm-hmm.
so they did, they essentially used the emergency measures with the first moratorium, the first moratorium of this board.
Right. Yeah, I remember this, the kind of the drama surrounding this issue. They passed it as an emergency. I think there was at least one developer who saw what was coming, because I think they in the very brief time right before they applied for like 8 multifamily divisions all of a sudden. But yeah, anyway, yeah, and then the county commission had to come back and pass it differently, and I think retracted the original moratorium.
Yes, that's correct. And so there were a few more able to slip under once they had to reinstate the moratorium. So to your original point, or your question rather, so they've been trying to deal with this code loophole for a very long time. And the homeowners have, in the last quite a few months, been coming to meetings pretty regularly and speaking out against the MLD current code. And some of them have been from this particular development, Mountain Homestead. And they have been talking extensively about sewer pollution in their water and other issues. And so that certainly influenced the current commissioners to try and get on with these MLD issues. I'm not sure that they had threatened a lawsuit at that point. I don't think that that was really the impetus. It was more just health, safety, and welfare, as they said.
Yeah, Sansaria, I just, my question is, it lists 50 people conspiring together for criminal activity. Have you done any reporting? Do you have any evidence that this is a conspiracy by this large group of people and entities?
I think it would be very unlikely. As the daughter of a real estate agent, honestly, when there's an issue with the development of a home, anybody who has anything to do with it at all gets sucked into the lawsuits, especially the real estate agents. And more often than not, it's found that they didn't have anything to do with it because, you know, if what the developers don't tell people, the developers don't tell people. And so I'm interested to see how this will play out before a judge, because there are so many people being looped in. And I think it's given the complaints, they do list their reasons for including everyone, but it would be incredibly difficult to prove that all of these people were actually conspiring. I know that just one of the real estate agents who sold the land to the developers is being sued because the homeowners are alleging that he didn't disclose that the land is partially mapped wetlands. And of course, we too already know now that there is a document in which the real estate agent did disclose that, and it's signed by the developers. So he's already sort of off the hook, in my opinion. We'll see what the actual judge says.
Continue. Yeah, please. I was just going to ask, do you have any idea on why this group of homeowners are pursuing this path versus like another type of lawsuit?
They've been attempting quite a few ways for a long time to try and get their MLD fixed, to get their current issues fixed with the sewer, to get essentially the developers or the county or anyone else to pay for sewer hookups, to pay for water hookups, to pay for environmental cleanup and anything else that they need so that they don't have to fix these brand new homes that they bought. And so this seems like a big showy way of getting that. And it seems that up until this point, their legal pleas have sort of gone unheard. Mm-hmm. And so this is an undeniable way to get people to pay attention, whether or not this actually goes to trial as it has been requested. I anticipate, just based on my personal knowledge, but obviously I have no legal experience, I don't believe that this, in this iteration, will go to trial because they are suing so many different people. And most of these people, I'd say, can claim that they were not conspiring at all. It probably will end up being kicked down to a lesser court, or it'll have to go back in a RICO suit with fewer people being sued. It's also because if you look at, and this is all published online, if you look at the defendants that are being sued, they're suing a lot of these people, not only in their official capacity, but independently just as a person, which I think they're trying to cover all of their bases to say that, you know, these people were doing stuff illegally in their jobs and also outside of their jobs. But I think that's also going to make things more difficult.
The plaintiffs have demanded a trial by jury and requested that, should the jury rule in their favor, the defendants award an unspecified amount of damages, pay to connect the homes to sewer and water, and fix issues on the properties allegedly related to negligence and fraudulent actions, among other restitution. I guess connecting to sewer and water makes some sense as restitution, but I guess depending on where this where the development is, that could be quite a lot of pipe that someone's going to have to pay to dig and install. So that is that's what they're seeking, though.
That was an interesting point that you bring up, because in the actual written complaint, they say specifically that they want to connect to Ponderay water, but of course the city of Ponderay doesn't have a sewer system, and so it says that the county would pay to connect them to Bonner County sewer, which is, I mean, there's not a Bonner County sewer as such. There are a bunch of sewer districts in Bonner County. And so which one they would choose, it would likely be Sandpoint, but that would be a very long way to go.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Case will be heard by Judge Amanda Brailsford of the U.S. District Court for the District of Idaho at an undetermined date. It's undetermined? Is it completely undetermined, or is there a ballpark kind of time that this might, that we might see the next action on this, Sansare?
As of yet, it has not been announced.
Okay. Well, 8:39. Will, any other questions for our field reporter?
Are you having fun out in the woods?
I sure am. It's a beautiful day and then not too hot yet. So that's always a bonus.
Yeah. Okay. Did you sleep in a tent last night?
I did.
Okay.
You're trying to narrow down where I am, trying to find me?
there's a lot of places you can sleep in a tent.
The new Green Bay campground.
Ooh.
Or refurbished Green Bay campground.
That could be, except for I doubt she has this good of cell phone reception at Green Bay. That if we were going to narrow it down, I think, yeah, triangulating your signal would probably be the way to do it.
There you go. You've been tracking my phone this whole time.
Right. Well, in addition to the news, Sansare, you have a number of other pieces in this week's Reader. A great grammar lesson kicks things off on page 3. We've taken more of your time than we expected. Of course, we usually go long on this show, and thank you for sharing so much of your time with us. Anything else you want to draw our attention to, or anything coming up in the Reader that we should look for in the coming weeks under your byline, Sansare?
Well, if anything happens on these county stories, that'll be me. I'll be covering that. But in the meantime, we're just having a lot of fun thought pieces and festival pieces for all the people standing in line waiting to hear the music.
Yeah. Hey, you got to talk to Kansas.
I did. That was really exciting.
Cool. You have on page 19 of the Reader, a full page, Sansare interviews the band, Kansas, who are playing at the festival at Sandpoint, next weekend. So look for that. This Reader is on newsstands now, the special festival edition, and, always a good one to read the Reader during festival time. Thanks so much, Sansare, for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Will, for coming in.
Thank you, Jack, for having me.
Yeah, I guess that's our show, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. We're going to go on now with Otto's Eclectic Mix here on 88.5 KRFY. And it is Festival of Sandpoint, the first weekend, is currently underway. We'll start with the Talking Heads, a band not playing at the Festival of Sandpoint this weekend. Here we are with Life During Wartime. We'll be back with more news next week on North Idaho News of the Week.